doing? I am glad that you are doing great, whichever one of you said that. Proud of you. Glad you're energetic. Clearly you've had your caffeine for the morning. Y'all, we made it. We made it to the end of our summer deep dive series. It has been 8 weeks looking at two books of the Bible. Like, first we start off in June with Philippians talking about joy. And like that thank you note that Paul and Timothy wrote this church in Philippi for the mission support. They're like, hey, thanks for sending us stuff. Here's a thank you note, which is just a good practice to be in. But it's all about joy, and it's got some great one-liners like, to live is Christ, to die is gain. Or like, we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength in no matter circumstance we're in. And then in July, we made the shift to Colossians, which is a whole different animal. Right, we've been talking about identity, like who is Christ? Who are we? What do we do? What's a Christian? And also the fact that Jesus is the top dog of everything, right? That's what this has been about. And so today we are going to cover the last major section of Colossians. So we have a lot of ground to cover. So turn in a Bible if you've got it to Colossians chapter 3. We're going to pick up the action in verse 18. That's where we're heading today. I know we've mentioned it a lot, but I'm going to remind you again, context matters. All the different books of the Bible were written at a particular time to a particular place from particular people with their own language, culture, society, everything about that. And to understand fully what's going on in the Bible, we have to at least ask those questions of what their world was like. If we miss context, we can end up in a place that God never intended us to go. Now, sometimes it's funny, right? Like some, when we mess up, because like some UFC fighter will like put Philippians 4:13 on their chest, like, I can do all things. And then they get in the ring and like round one, get knocked out, like, it's like, yeah, you got it wrong. And it's kind of funny because you paid the consequence of that. But other times with different practices, we can get it wrong and end up in a very, very rough place to be, where we actually end up going against what God intended and exercising it in a bad way. That's the potential for the passage we're reading this morning. So we're going to have to do a lot of good, hard work, and it's going to be very teaching heavy. I'm going to warn you up front. It's going to be very teaching heavy because we've got a long Christian history to mildly correct about how we've treated this passage. Most of that is from us that have been in pulpits over the last centuries. So on our part, we can do better, but we're going to try resetting that today. So Colossians 3, starting in verse 18, goes like this. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven. Right off the top, I would like to thank Pastor Corey for giving me a very calm passage that no one has any tensions around. But in all seriousness, this passage was actually one of the reasons I got into studying and teaching the Bible as a profession. Not for any fondness of the content of it, but because of how it's been poorly used against people, that it's like, that's not at all what that was going on or intending. And so we've got to actually do some work so that we'll kind of relieve the tension in the room a bit, as well as land in a very good place, but we've got to do the good work to get there. You tracking with me?
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad you're with me. Jarrett, you're my man. All right, so this is a household code. And now this was very, very common in the ancient world. Every single good Roman moral writer had one. They, in their writings, so not the Bible, but in Roman writings, basically their household codes were in order to structure society by the three key relationships: husbands and wives, fathers and children, slaves and masters. Now, they would only address the oldest living male in a family, because that guy, referred to as the paterfamilias, father of the family, had the power of life and death over every single member with impunity. They could do whatever they wanted, no matter what. And so the way they would talk is only to master, husband, and father, because that was all the same person. It makes sense as to why Paul and Timothy, the authors of Colossians, would take on this way of writing about how to structure society, how to order the world, because they're like, okay, how do we do this as Christians? They take the form and do a lot of different things with it that turns that upside down. So how we're going to look at this, for each pairing of these relationships, marriage, parenting, and influence and work, we're going to look at first, like, what was the Roman context? What world were they dealing with that this had to come about? What Colossians actually is trying to communicate? And then, what on earth do we do now with this information? Make sense? Everyone still with me? Yes. All right, love it. So this goes best. Preaching goes best when it's a dialogue, not a monologue, because I like hearing your voices, not just mine. All right? So work with me. We're going to get through this together. It's going to be amazing. So first relationship that gets mentioned is marriage. So particularly Roman context over here. So women in the ancient world did not have much in the way of rights. To the Roman culture's credit, women were as liberated then as they have ever been up until the modern era, but it was still very restrictive, oppressive, and basically they were largely considered property. They didn't have the right to vote, hold land, any kind of deal like that. And basically their life consisted of being attached to their father, and then when they got married, to their husband. And that was kind of the authority figure and made the rules. And again, Roman men could do whatever they wanted. The particular point of interest for this passage is that transition between father's authority to husband. So there were two types of marriage in the Roman world: a with the hand and without the hand marriage. Like our wedding ceremonies end with kissing because we think that's romantic. We're like, and by the power vested in me by the state of Michigan and the Wesleyan Church, you may now kiss the bride. Their ceremonies. And thank you. Their ceremonies ended with, by the power vested in me by the almighty Caesar, you know, God, Augustus, whatever, you may now shake hands. Apparently that was a romantic way to do it. But that moment was one of the rare moments where a woman in the ancient world had a choice. She could either do the marriage by shaking the hand or not. So by shaking hands and actually like finishing the ceremony, they would be like, okay, I'm officially transferring myself from my father's authority to the husband's authority. I am a part of this family. I'm committed to it. I'm with it forever. All those kind of things. They could also do a without the hand marriage, which is, yeah, we're married, but I do what I want. Essentially remaining under their father's authority, but they moved into their husband's house. And so they would be under the father's authority, but he's not around. And so like, I'm not a part of this. I'm over here. I do what I want. And we don't really talk. That was without the hand marriage. Again, husbands, for them, they could do anything according to Roman law. For example, if they tasted wine on their wife's lips, they could divorce them. I know, weird. But here's what Colossians says into that environment. Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. A great irony over history is that the half of these relationship comments that we forgot about were normal in the ancient world. And the part that we're like, and whatever, that's normal to us, they were freaking out about. So the side that we're that like bothers us a bit is this, like, wives, submit to your husbands. Okay, essentially, wives, with the hand marriage is how Christians do it. Commit to that relationship. We're all on board. Be all in for that new family. The part that freaked out the ancient audience was this husbands love your wives bit. Because this word love, if you've been around church for an extended period of time, you've probably heard someone reference the Greek word agape, because this was originally written in Greek, not English. The verb form of that is agapao, which in essence means do for someone else what is absolutely best for them without any regard for what you get in return. Husbands, do what is absolutely best for your wife, no matter what, without expecting anything in return for it. That's not do whatever you want. That's a high standard, and it's a lot higher than just commit to being a part of the family. So how we deal with this now? Marriage works best when we're both on the team. So on the wife's side, right, the I'll do what I want, typically not helpful. But also commit to the relationship. Be like, yeah, I'm all in for what's going on here. This marriage, like, I'm in it, locked in. We're going to go for that. Husbands, do the dishes without expectation of getting laid later. All right? Just be helpful. I love overflow. But no matter what you're doing, even if it's like chores around the house, but also when it comes to those big decisions that you have to make as a team, as a unit, people get equal voice or should in marriage. Like when you're making those decisions, when it comes time to pull the trigger, do whatever is best for the other person, not what's best for you. Now imagine a marriage in which you don't have to worry about will my needs get met because you are so confident in the other person that you don't have to worry about it. That's what Christian marriage looks like. And that's what this passage is trying to get to. First of all, this passage has nothing to do with women in ministry. Please don't ever use it for that. This is dealing with marriage. If you want to talk about what the Bible has to say about women in ministry, I would love to. That's a message for a different day. Spoiler alert, equal. So, in marriage, be in it for the other person. Commit to the team. Be like, hey, no matter what's going on, we're in it together no matter what. That is Christian marriage. That is relationship number one. The next one, parenting. All right, Roman context. We're going back over here. Roman context of parenting. It was absolutely brutal to be a child in the ancient world. From the very beginning of your life, half of all children died before age 5. Now, some of that is due to medical issues, like they just did not have modern medicine, which makes it a lot easier to keep people alive, which is why we are so successful at it now. But also, there was another problem. When a child was born, the primary concern that parents had was that they raise a strong, functioning, society on board adult. Okay. Nothing else. The main value of children was that they would be adults someday. Right. And so everything was aimed at make this a good Roman adult. So when a baby was born, the father, you know, paterfamilias, head of the household, who these household codes typically address, would just stand at some kind of pavement around their home. And the baby would be placed in front of the father. Now, the father had two options. If he wanted, you know, if he was like, you know what, we're taking this baby in, you'd either pick up the baby or give instructions for it to be fed, to be cared for, and to go with that. Other option is all the father had to do was to turn his back on that baby, and that was giving the order to throw it in a garbage dump. Wow. Or a sewer, or abandoned in the wilderness. This practice got called infant exposure, and it was normal and at some times celebrated in the Roman world. It was actually a Christian distinctive that we thought that was bad. In the Roman world, abortion, abandoning children on the street, like that's just normal behavior, whether you didn't want another mouth to feed or it was a girl and you wanted a boy and you wanted to like select that way. All those practices were normal to them. And as Christians, we were like, I don't think that's how that should work. That's a person. But then, let's say a child made it through that selection process. Again, the Roman father's main concern was that they raise a tough adult. So children were not allowed to eat sitting down because if you sat down, you're weak. Children were not allowed to bathe with warm water because warm water makes you weak, so you only get cold water and only a short bath. Roman children were not allowed to sleep very long at night because oversleeping makes you weak. They were intense. They could also discipline their child however they wanted to. Beatings were normal. So here's what Colossians says into that environment. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Again, did not freak them out at all in the ancient world, but to us, we're like, okay, let's see what's up. What if their parent does something weird, right? Fathers, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. As in, that's not property, that's a person. As in, like, it matters what their feelings are toward the situation. As in, by the time they get an adult, you should have treated them so well that they're ready for independence. As in, like, hey, we actually, like, it matters what we do. So both ends of this family role. As child, yes, obey your parents. Absolutely, because they're smarter than you, they're older, they've been through this before. Parents, be kind to that child and do what's best for them. For us, family works best when we're in it for each other. Yes. Yeah. If you are pregnant, whether it was by like a choice you made or someone else made a choice to you, and you happen to find yourself in a situation where you're like, man, I don't think I can support this kid. I don't know if like I can actually provide a quality of life for this child that's actually anything beyond wild poverty. Like, I don't know how to like raise this child. Like, I don't have the support network to do it. If you're in that situation, consider adoption before abortion. That's why places like Bethany Christian Services in town exist, because the best thing for that child is to get to live. If you are a parent, so we've made it to the point where you're actually parenting a child, build confidence and care into the kids. Because yes, they are going to have to face the world alone without you at some point. They're going to have to be able to function as an independent adult that can make decisions for themselves, work a bank account, like actually decide like how do I want to go through like college or work, like actually pick a new place to work, maybe even buy a house if they're doing really well. Build that confidence into your child, but also care, as in empathy is important. Like they children should learn how to care about other people from the fact that their parents cared about them. That should be how that relationship goes. So build both sides. Now, as people, we tend to fade one way or the other. Like, I'm going to raise a tough kid. They're going to be independent. They smash the finger, put a Band-Aid on it, rub some dirt in it. You're fine. Confidence, but balance the care side of like, all right, you did get hurt. Here's a hug. Let's work through this. You'll be okay. If you are a child, first of all of us are children of somebody. That's how we got here. But also, if you actually are close to that child range, balance fun and future. That looks different if you're 7 or 17. Right? When you're 7, heavy on the fun side, a little bit on the future side. As in, like, when you go to school, please learn how to read and write and do math. That would just help the rest of us. Like, and also you, like, to get a job. Like, to apply for a job, you're going to have to know how to fill out a job application. You need to learn to write. It's important. But have fun. First of all, we're Christians. We have the most to celebrate. It should look like we're having a good time. But also, if you're 17, there's these questions that are like, okay, what do I do after high school? Am I going to go to college? Am I going to go into the military? Am I going to go into a trade school? Oh, just go straight into a profession? Am I going to work for a bit while I try and figure this out? Those questions are going to start needing to get some quality answers. But also still have fun. Enjoy the fact that your body doesn't creak when you wake up in the morning. Like, that happened a lot sooner than I was prepared for. I'm 28 and I creak. It's the worst. Anyway, but that's what's going on there. Family works best when we're in it for each other. Not parents do whatever you want and the kid just has to work with it. No. Works best when we're doing what's best for other people. Third relationship, third one that gets brought up here. Slaves and masters. So, Roman context. 50% of the Roman Empire were slaves. So when it talks about slaves and masters, you're really addressing almost everybody because most people fall into one of those two categories or is tangentially attached to one of those two categories. You lived, worked, were slave or free or anything like that, or were a child, a parent, whatever, all in the same place, the home. And so we're really talking about more than work. This is your entire life we're discussing. On top of that, if you passed a slave and a master walking side by side on the street, which was normal, you probably couldn't actually tell them apart unless you looked really closely, because they were the same ethnicity, they wore similar clothing, and in general, they actually had that kind of like give and take. Now, again, Roman masters could do whatever they wanted, which is why we have some of the particularly gruesome horror stories around it. But by and large, it was an interesting dynamic because slaves and masters were generally the same ethnicity. Further than that, Roman slaves were required to be paid. The pathway to freedom as a Roman slave, everybody knew it. Basically, you save up your weekly wages for a certain extent of time, and you just buy your own freedom because you had no expenses, because you lived in the house and everyone else paid for like the food kind of thing, so you could save up your money and buy your freedom. However, no form of slavery can be considered easy, and certainly not good. Again, Roman masters did whatever they wanted and could legally do whatever they wanted because in Rome, unless you were that top dog on the pile, everybody and everything else was property. Into that environment, Colossians says this: slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything and do it not only when their eye is on you to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Speaking of no favoritism, masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven. Talk about leveling the field a bit. It lifts up and says, okay, if you are in the slave side of this, if you're in the servant side of this, by the way, this is why most of your translations probably say servant, is to try and like break our minds like in toward more of what that reality was like. But if you're on the servant side of this, okay, work hard, do your job, do it well, because everything you do is for the Lord. By the way, I will bet you anything you've never heard that verse in context. Right, do whatever you do for the Lord. Yeah. Anyway, but do what you do for the Lord. On the master side, they're like, hey, chill out and treat everybody right, because God's looking at you and expects a lot. It levels the field and says, hey, I don't care what they do over there. We as Christians do better. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wouldn't it have been easier? Wouldn't it have been better? Wouldn't it have been what we'd hope for more if Colossians just came out and said, let's all abolish slavery? Yeah. Right? That's usually our first thought, like, man, that sounds different than what I would have wrote. And correct, it's different than what I would have written because I'm in 21st century America. But there's two reasons why it's done this way. One, the ancient world could conceive of existence without slavery as readily as you can imagine not having the internet. Like the early church, even about 300 years after this, was like, okay, all of us want to get rid of this practice, but we don't know what to replace it with. We don't know how to care for everybody, and so we're going to continue working and level things out as best as we can. But here's the second thing. God knows something we typically don't recognize. I know. Surprise. God's a bit smarter than we are. Laws follow culture. They do not create it. Every law that has been passed in the United States ever has been a reflection on what the culture valued, not setting a tone. Like, there's a reason the very first amendment to the Constitution is freedom of press, speech, and religion, because that's why a lot of them came to America, to have that. There's a reason the federal government just made Juneteenth a national holiday, because enough of us cared about it that they're like, oh, we should like put that in paper and writing. laws follow culture. So the way to actually get rid of slavery is to create a culture where it's no longer necessary. That was their method. And so when you get into a culture where not only do wives and husbands, they're like on the team working for each other, when you create a family structure, which is the entire household you live in, right, where everyone's in it for each other, and then you create a master-servant relationship where it's like, yeah, everyone's treated correctly, fairly, and given what's due to them, you no longer need slavery. Through that methodology is how a bunch of Christians led the abolition movement 1,800 years later. Because we created a world in which we didn't need it. But just in case you weren't sold that the Bible was against slavery, the letter of Colossians was actually not the only Colossians was not the only letter delivered to the church at Colossae at that time. The other one, thank you for working with me. I appreciate your patience. Sometimes I trip over my own words. Anyway, the letter of Colossians was also delivered with Philemon. Philemon was the owner of the house that the church at Colossae met in, and the subject of Philemon is this guy named Onesimus, who was a runaway slave from that household. Essentially, he had run into Paul on one of Paul's journeys, and then Paul was like, hey, how about you believe in Jesus? And Onesimus was like, that sounds awesome. Let's do that. And so Paul had Onesimus carry Philemon and Colossians back to the Colossian church. In the letter of Philemon to his former master that Onesimus had to carry and likely recite and perform for the whole church, this was Paul's command. Philemon, do not welcome Onesimus back as a slave, but as a brother. As in, that guy ain't your property, he's your family. That is a bold statement in a world that would have had no place in. As I was trying to figure out how to actually put this in modern terms to actually give us something to like work with, because thank God we abolished slavery. Thank God we have Juneteenth and we have all of these things. That's amazing. That's the right way to be going. But also, this like master-servant, master-slave relationship was actually all of like the influence you had in the world. So rather than saying like works best, because that was just kind of awkward and wasn't quite encompassing it, influence works best when we're all in for Jesus. Whatever you're doing, do it as if Jesus himself asked you to do it. So when you go to work, if your boss is like, hey, it's your turn to clean the bathroom, great, awesome, it will be spotless. When you go home, what is best for your family? Do that. When you like go to coffee, learn the name of the barista, and just be like, hey, man, how you doing? A great practice to be in. Like, when you go through a drive-thru, they're expecting you to be really demanding. What if you were really kind and crack some jokes with them, not when they're out of, a rush? Have a good time with it. But whatever you're doing, do it for the Lord. Influence works best when we're all in for Jesus. Now, I want to give you one more observation about this passage, and then we'll push toward our conclusion. But I want to give you one more observation about this passage. In the Roman household codes, you only addressed the husband, father, master. Colossians addresses women, children, and slaves. In the Roman world, when you made a list, whoever you mentioned first had more dignity. You remember who Colossians mentions first? Wives, children, slaves. Colossians elevates people and says everyone has dignity. No matter who you are, if society is like, nah, we're going to try and push you down under the boot, Colossians is like, nah, we ain't doing it that way. We're going to raise people up. But also, if you are on top, remember, God's staring at you and expects a lot. We're going to bring you down several pegs so that low things are raised, high things brought down, so it is level. That is what's going on in this household code, not anything else. Dignity goes to everybody, whether you're on top or bottom in any sphere of influence you have. Everyone has dignity. Everybody matters. Everybody's important. But what do we do with all of this newfound dignity? What do we do? Right back to Colossians 3, 23. It says, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. With this dignity, we go all in for Jesus. That's how being a Christian works. So as a way to wrap up this entire summer deep dive series, everywhere that we've been going, everything we have done, everything we talked about the last 2 months, I want to give you this last statement. What it means to be a Christian, in whatever context you find yourself in, whatever relationships you have, whoever you are, what it means to be a Christian is to be all in for Jesus. Let's pray. God, thank you for today. Thank you for the opportunity to spend some time in your word, hang out, and get to see what you intend by what you say. God, give us the strength to be able to challenge things that we've understood wrongly, and give us the comfort level to be able to work with them. God, thank you for what you have done for us. Not only in that you came for us, but you also gave us dignity. You showed us how to live, gave us a new way to engage with our world, where it's not about who has more or less, but it's about everybody always. God, it is the absolute best privilege of our lives to get to be on your team. So God, as we engage with the rest of today, as we engage with the rest of this week and our lives to come, help us to be absolutely all in for you. There's nothing better than serving a God who can make all things happen. There's nothing better than serving a God who can do everything necessary to make things right. And so God, give us the audacity to be so committed to you that everything else fades away. God, we love you. We thank you. We pray all these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.